I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Dorothy Wooden joins me again, the film critic and writer, is the director of programming for the Doxa Documentary Film Festival. It runs the 4th through the 14th of May, and as it has for 15 years now, features great documentary films. This year is no exception. I'll get Dorothy to preview what's in store over these 10 days in May. Visit doxafestival.ca for tickets and information. Dorothy's own Twitter handle is at Dorothy Wooden. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Dorothy Wooden. Ms. Wooden, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I probably asked you this before, but what is the meaning of the word doxa, D-O-X-A?
It actually is a Greek word. It means opinion, which, you know, seems very fitting for doxa, since we we have strongly held opinions about just about everything.
Yeah, and I guess when you program a festival like this, as you do year after year, what's going on in the world factors into, say, the films that we'll see, right?
Yeah, very much so, especially this year because, you know, it was such an incredibly strange year for so many people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the American election, for example, and think, uh-oh, there's going to be a slate of films coming down the pike, you know, contending with that issue or that, you know, particular strange set of circumstances. And sure enough, you know, they kind of rolled in short order. So there was, one film in particular called Waking the Sleeping Giant, and you know, every time I would talk to them, I'd say, "Well, are you finished? You finished your film?" And they'd be, and because the story was sort of unfolding, you know, on a moment to moment, daily basis, they kept saying, "Well, no, we're still shooting." So, which was, you know, quite wild. And these films are essentially, you know, fresh out of the box; they're brand new and sort of the moment, very much so.
So that film that you just mentioned, what was that called again?
It's called Waking the Sleeping Giant.
And what's that one about?
It's principally about the U.S. election, but also about the sort of this coalition of people, you know, with Bernie Sanders and, you know, anti-poverty activists and Black Lives Matter activists who sort of come together in this intersectional movement, you know, of like labor unions and, you know, poverty workers and just ordinary people to kind of fight for American democracy and fight back against what's happening in the U.S. at the moment.
Is that one of the films that David Beers, the guest curator, one of the guest
curators?
You got
curators? It! Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, Dave, we've had a pretty long-standing relationship, the two of us, because I've, you know, when he started the Taiyi, he was like, "Oh, do you want to write for the Taiyi?" And I'm like, "Sure." So that was 2004, and I talked to him earlier in the year, and he said, I want to do an anti-Trump film festival, because he was, you know, on fire at the moment. And I said, well, you know, why don't you do it in the context of Doxa? Why don't you curate a program? And he was like, oh, okay. I said, you know, I'll pay you. Like, it'll be good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's actually, it came about fairly easily. And, you know, there were, all these films were sort of, you know, tumbling into the festival. And it's like, you know, would send him anything that I thought kind of pertained directly to what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how it kind of emerged, almost of its own accord.
Yeah, and there's a Ben Carson documentary too, right?
Yeah, Pac-Man. it's pretty wild. And the filmmaker's going to be, well, actually, both filmmakers for both, Waking the Sleeping Giant and Pac-Man will both be here to talk about their films with Dave Beers.
Well, yeah,
that'll be fun.
Yeah. So from my sense, and I have no figures from you or anybody else at Doxa, but from the word on the street, online, and elsewhere, it just seems like Doxa is growing year after year. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, you see it especially in the number of films that are submitted to the festival, because every year, you know, the number just kind of goes up and up and up and up. And there was, you know, earlier in the year, a few points where I thought, Oh my God, like, what are we going to do? How do we get through all these films without exploding? But we managed it. It is a pretty extraordinary sometimes. And I think, you know, there is that whole thing about interesting times make for interesting films, because people are so, I think, you know, quite rightly furious about the state of the world. And I think, you know, they need to shout it from the rooftops. So that's what, and I think that's how you see it manifested in, specifically in documentary cinema.
Yeah. So if one submits a film to Doxa, and you get all the submissions, do you go through all of them?
I go through a fair chunk, actually. I like to keep a hand in the submissions just to kind of see, you know, what's coming down the pike. So we have, it's a bit of a two-tiered system. We have a screening committee, which is about 15 people, and then a smaller programming committee, which is five, including myself. So if a film has, you know, two or three yeses, it goes forward to programming, and we look at that. So we look, and we also invite a lot of films from filmmakers and film institutes and distributors. So they come in, you know, sort of a couple of different streams, which is a whole lot of a whole lot of film. But, you know, it's also great because you're seeing stuff that, you know, positively blows your hair back sometimes.
Yeah. And in terms of the attendance, do you get a sense of, because I'm assuming there's a lot of locals go to Doxa. Do you get a sense of what their tastes are and what they want in terms of what they want to see?
Yeah, it's funny how certain films, you know, oddly enough, dance films do spectacularly well in Vancouver. Yeah. And, you know, because there's a sort of big performing arts and dance community. But, you know, anything to do with the environment, political films, and again, the sort of more curious, I think, hybrid docs where, you know, they sort of are traversing boundaries between nonfiction and fiction and sort of docudrama. So I think, and we, because that's, you know, particularly what we're interested in at Docs as well, is films that really push, you know, the boundaries of the form and play with ideas around what is documentary, essentially. So, and those tend to be, you know, sometimes very, like, the most innovative and curious and, you know, playful, sometimes, films that we screen. Because you don't want documentary to just entirely be always about, you know, Sturm und Drang and heavy, heavy, hard, challenging stuff. Sometimes you really need, you do need that balance, I think, between dark and light.
So one of the films that I was reading about that really interested me is The Road Forward.
Yeah, our opening film.
Yeah, so I had Marie Clements on when it was a piece at Push.
Yeah.
I never saw it, but I remember talking to her about it, and so you've seen it. Well, what is it? It's a documentary that deals with I'll let you tell it, and then there's a musical element to it. Is that right?
Yeah. So it started life as a stage production. With the Push Festival, and so I think the documentary has probably been in the pipeline for about 4 or 5 years now with the film board.
Yeah.
So it really is a marriage between conventional documentary, you know, telling stories about the Native Voice newspaper and, you know, the Continental Express that went, you know, to sort of challenge the Trudeau government when they were repealing First Nations rights, intermingled with, you know, songs and performances from the original stage work. So, again, it's a hybrid doc, and there's a lot of reenactments kind of going on. But the thing that was kind of most extraordinary to me about it was, again, that sort of intermingling of these two different forms. So you're taking a stage work, and you're reinventing it in documentary form and, you know, weaving in all these different narrative strands in amongst all the performances. And it really gives it, you know, a real fire, I think, and you know, from the performances, but also I think additional context, additional weight, you know, from the more sort of conventional documentary elements that are dealing with, you know, history. They're dealing with, you know, people talking about their experiences very directly. So I thought it was just a really extraordinary, you know, convergence of many, many different things. And stories that I had no idea about. Like, I just, I didn't know anything about, you know, the Native Voice newspaper. And so I was always kind of curious to grow up in BC, and there's, you know, aspects of our history that we, you know, that are very little known. And I think that's what, you know, again, documentary can do, is present this, you know, huge wealth of information and story in a way that is really easy to, you know, to take in and to understand and to give it, you know, that kind of emotional weight and context, because it's framed inside essentially, you know, a form of story.
Yeah, I remember talking to her and just thinking just how talented she was.
Yeah, well, she's great.
Yeah.
She's pretty amazing. Yeah.
There's a film called For Dear Life, and it's about a fellow who's orchestrating his own death, and that's in the news a lot, because this is something that we're all, our government in Ottawa at least, is thinking about. And is that a local film?
It is. So Carmen Pollard, she's worked primarily as an editor, so this is her first film that she's directed, and it's having its world premiere at Doxa. So it's actually the main character in the film is Carmen's cousin, and who's given a terminal diagnosis of cancer, and he is sort of preparing, because he's a theater producer, so he kind of takes on, you know, his death essentially is this kind of final production that he's mounting. And so it's a really a portrait of him contending very actively with the idea of, you know, what does death mean, and, you know, how do you live in the face of that, and how do you maintain, you know, your sense of self and who you are going forward into this kind of this final chapter of your life. So it's a portrait of him and, you know, all of his experiences, but also the people around him, his family and friends who sort of got drawn into this final project that he's putting together and all kind of come together around it. So it's funny because, you know, it ends obviously with his death, but in some ways it's a very celebratory film because he essentially, you know, he died exactly the way he lived with, and doing precisely what he wanted. And so there's something very, you know, wonderful about that. Yeah. And, you know, as odd as that may sound about, you know, someone dying, it actually ends in a very beautiful and quite sort of profoundly happy way in a strange sense.
Yeah, there's also programming of short films, right? There's a whole bunch of them that'll be...
Yeah. Well, actually, the shorts, I have to say, this year, we got so many amazing short films.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have, like, that sort of wealth of shorts, you're kind of, you know, because if they don't fit in front of a feature, you're looking for some way to kind of collect them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them just came magically together. There was a lot of films, oddly enough. You know, it's funny how certain things just kind of emerge. And principally about the relationship that people have with animals and, you know, in various different ways, sometimes really relationships with animals, but so, you know, there's a shorts program called Creature Comfort. So it's about people, you know, basically setting out to help animals. And it's, you know, all of the films inside that program. There's one about a turtle rescue center in Ontario called Fix and Release. And, you know, when I watched it, I thought, I'm quitting. I'm moving, you know, away to Ontario to go and rescue turtles because it just seems so sweet and so lovely and so peaceful and, you know, such a sort of demonstrably physical thing that you could do to do good in the world was to, you know, fix these poor turtles up after they've been smashed on the road and, you know, set them back in the swamp and let them have a happy life.
Yeah, I just talked to a short filmmaker who did Cat Mills, who did Fixed, and there's a turtle in that one that gets fixed.
Oh,
as well.
I know, it's funny. Turtles just came up this year. There's another short program called Turtles Are Always Home. So it was like, what? What is with the turtles this year? But you know, it's the way she rolls sometimes.
Yeah.
But again, Fixed is really, really lovely. Just a great, great little film.
It is. I mean, it just shows us about the relationship. I've seen it already, the relationship that we have with stuff and how we too often throw out things that can be fixed and makes us think about just our culture in terms of consumption and what we buy and how cheap everything is as well.
Yeah. Also, you know, the very sort of deep sentimental attachments that we have to certain objects and, you know, how you form these relationships with them, and you do want to take care of them and give them, you know, another life if you can.
Yeah. The Manifesto, that's the closing night film, is that right?
Yep.
And that features Cate Blanchett.
It does.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of Cate Blanchett in that movie.
Yeah. So what does she do?
Yeah. Sorry?
What does she do in the film?
Well, she plays 13 different characters throughout the film. And again, it's an interesting creature, that one, because it started life basically as an art installation. And then they reinvented it almost, I guess, in the form of a documentary film, and it premiered at Sundance. And I saw it earlier in the year, and because our spotlight program at the festival this year is Troublemakers, and it just seemed, you know, the perfect embodiment of that idea. Because essentially what the nature of the film is that she's playing these 13 different people who are each charged with reciting, you know, one of the century's great manifestos, whether that's, you know, the Dogma 95 or it's, you know, the Communist Manifesto or it's a Fluxus Manifesto. So you get these kind of very high-blown, you know, stream of consciousness words about, you know, changing the universe and changing everything and rewriting the rules and, you know, tearing down the old and creating the new. But in the context of each character that she's, you know, proclaiming, that's a very, sometimes a very ironic, almost, you know, and often very funny twist on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the case of Dogma 95, Lars von Trier's, you know, rules for making film. So she's reciting it to a class of, you know, kids, basically telling them, you know, it's okay to steal, you know, from anywhere. It's, you know, and there's no such thing as an original idea, like just borrow and, you know, make it your own. And so, it's actually really, really funny. But it also, you know, because it forces you to kind of rethink about what's actually being said in all these different contexts, that it, you know, makes you re-engage with some of those, you know, very seminal texts,
mm-hmm.
where you are kind of thinking, okay, this is, and then almost in some ways I think reinvents it and, you know, makes you see it anew in a whole other fashion.
Yeah. The Grown Ups, that's a film that stood out for me was reading all
the
films.
Yeah, oh, I love that film. So sweet. I mean, I think we've shown every one of her films.
Uh-huh.
Rita Alberti, she's Chilean. And, yeah, it's just, it's a really adorable film, but also dealing, you know, with some pretty profound subject matter around, you know, so it's a group of people who are special needs who have been inside a, essentially, you know, an institution school for essentially most of their lives, and they all work in a bakery,
mm-hmm.
inside the school. But they're coming to a point, you know, as they're maturing, where they really want additional independence. They want, you know, to have relationships. They want to live on their own. They want to, you know, have some degree of independence and freedom. And they are running up against, you know, very physical and real societal ideas about, you know, what people are capable of,
yeah.
you know, what does sexuality mean? What is, you know, how do you support yourself if you're, you know, a special needs person. So, and because she's such an amazing filmmaker, it, you know, you never, you're allowed to kind of really go in depth into what each one of these individuals is dealing with, and to really get a sense of, you know, just what that human struggle is, and how, you know, kind of emotionally profound it is for people who are in the midst of trying to make these life decisions, you know, and having other people sort of with a degree of authority over them saying, no, you can't do that, even though, you know, there are, most of them, I think, they're in their mid-30s or 40s, even 50s at this point. Yeah. But, you know, just, and, you know, exquisitely made. She just has such an incredible sensibility that, you know, it's just lovely to look at as well.
Yeah. The other thing that I was wondering about in terms of you and what you do during your week, say, on average, how many films do you see a week?
Well, when you're in programming mode, you see, you know, you're trying to give each film the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
You're vetting it properly. But I'd say on average, probably 6-7 films a day. And, you know, because we had so many this year, you know, we were squeezing them in. So, you know, sideways, where, mm-hmm. you, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, all weekend, you know, when you're making dinner, when you're folding laundry, when you're, you know, doing whatever, there's always a film playing.
Mm.
In the sort of, you know, on the counter or on the side of your bed or wherever, so that you can always, you know, you're always watching, which is, it's a curious thing sometimes, because you do reach a sort of saturation point.
I'll bet, yeah.
Yeah, who you think, okay, I'm full, like, I can't take any more today, that's it. You know, and sometimes also the films that we screen, I mean, sometimes they're very, very challenging, mm-hmm. subject matter. You know, you're dealing with genocide, you're dealing with, you know, basically the worst behaviors that human beings can exhibit, all captured, you know, on cinema for you. And so it does feel like there's a sort of toll to be taken, or is taken, like, on your soul occasionally, in taking it all in and thinking about it and, you know, and then writing about it for the program. But you also, you know, and I think when you are programming, you have to think about you have to put yourself, I think, in the position of an audience member and think, okay, you know, what are you getting out of this film? Is it, you know, worth somebody paying, you know, the babysitter and taking transit downtown and, you know, coming to see this film? Like, it has to be that powerful and that great of a piece of work that, you know, it's necessary.
What sort of films do you watch for fun, then?
Oh, well, I tend to watch a lot of science fiction and a lot of genre stuff. And, you know, John Carpenter, like, pretty cheesy stuff, but you need to cut documentary.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of your work and what you do at Doxa. I always appreciate the time that you take to talk to me about this great festival and all else.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
Yeah, there's one piece you wrote in, it was in the Taiyi, it was in December. It was late last year. I can't remember the name of the film now, but I think you didn't like, or you liked it and I didn't like it. I can't remember what it was, though. And I remember reading it, and I was thinking of sending you a note. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. That's how good a writer she is, that she's making me think about something that I just, you know, I spent $11 at the movie theater to go see.
Yeah.
And, that's how much a fan I am of you. So,
That's very nice to hear.
And I love listening to you whenever you're on with Andrea and Lisa.
That's really fun to do, actually.
It's a marvelous show, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah. Well, thanks for this, Dorothy. All the best.
Oh, thank you.
The website for more, doxafestival.ca. It's from the 4th to the 14th of May. Dorothy Wooden, it's director of programming. Join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.